Chapter 5. On Night Street. Granny's mind was getting more and more muddled. Lina would come home in the evenings and find her rifling through the kitchen cupboards, surrounded by cans and jars with their lids off, or tearing the covers off her bed and trying to lift up the mattress with her skinny arms.
"It was an important thing," she would say. "The thing that was lost."
"But if you don't know what it was," said Lina, "how will you know when you found it?"
Granny didn't try to answer this question. She just flapped her hands at Lina and said,
"Never mind, never mind, never mind,"
and kept on searching. These days, Mrs. Murdo spent a great deal of time sitting by their window rather than her own. She would tell Granny she was just coming to keep her company.
"I don't want her to keep me company,"
Granny complained to Lina, and Lina said,
"Maybe she's lonely, Granny. Let her come."
Lina rather liked having Mrs. Murdo around. It was a bit like having a mother there. She wasn't anything like Lina's own mother, who had been a dreamy, absent-minded sort of person. Mrs. Murdo was motherlike in quite a different way. She made sure they all ate a good breakfast in the morning, usually potatoes with mushroom gravy and beet tea. She lined up the vitamin pills by each person's plate and made sure they were swallowed. When Mrs. Murdo was there, shoes got picked up and put away, spills were wiped off the furniture, and Poppy always had on clean clothes. Lina could relax when Mrs. Murdo was around. She knew things were taken care of. Every week, Lina, like all workers between age 12 and age 15, had Thursday off. One Thursday, as she was standing in line at the Garn Square Market, hoping to get a bag of turnips for stew that night, she overheard a startling conversation between two people standing behind her.
"What I wanted," said one voice, "was some paint for my front door. It hasn't been painted for years. It's gray and peeling, horrible. I heard a store over on Night Street had some. I was hoping for blue."
"Blue would be nice," said the other voice wistfully.
"But when I got there," the first voice continued, "the man said he had no paint, never had. Disagreeable man. All he had were a few colored pencils."
Colored pencils? Lina had not seen colored pencils in any store for ages. Once, she'd had two red ones, a blue one, and a brown one. She'd used these for her drawing until they were stubs too small to hold. Now, she had only one plain pencil left, and it was rapidly growing shorter. She longed to have colored pencils for her pictures of the imaginary city. She had a feeling it was a colorful place, though she didn't know what its colors might be. There were other things, of course, on which her money would be better spent. Granny's only coat was full of holes and coming apart at the seams. But Granny rarely went out, Lina told herself. She was either at home or in her yarn shop. She didn't really need a new coat, did she? Besides, how much could a few pencils cost? She could probably get a coat for Granny and some pencils. So that afternoon, she set out for Night Street. She took Poppy with her. Poppy had learned how to ride piggyback. She wrapped her legs around Lina's waist and gripped Lina's throat with her small, strong fingers. On Budlow Street, people were standing in long lines with their bundles of laundry at the washing stations. The washers stirred the clothes in the washing machines with long poles. In days past, the machines themselves had whirled the clothes around, but not one of them worked anymore. Lina turned up Hafter Street, where the four street lamps were still out, and a building crew was repairing a partly collapsed roof. Orly Gordon called out to her from high on a ladder, and Lina looked up and waved. Farther on, she passed a woman with bits of rope and string for sale, and a man pulling a cart full of carrots and beets to the grocery stores. At the corner, a cluster of little children played catch with a rag ball. The streets were alive with people today. Moving fast, Lina threaded her way among them. But as she went into Otterwill Street, she saw something that made her slow down. A man was standing on the steps of the gathering hall,
shouting and howling, and a crowd of people had gathered around him. Lina went closer, and when she saw who it was, her insides gave a lurch. It was Saj Merrill. His arms flailed wildly, and his eyes were stretched wide open. In a high, rapid voice, he wailed out a stream of words.
"I have been to the unknown regions," he cried. "There is nothing, nothing, nothing there. Did you think something out there might save us? There's only darkness and monsters, darkness and terrible deep holes, darkness forever. The rats are the size of houses. The rocks are sharp as knives. The darkness sucks your breath out. No hope for us out there. Oh, no, no hope, no hope."
He went on like this for a few minutes and then crumpled to the ground. The people watching him looked at each other and shook their heads. "Gone mad," Lina heard someone say. "Yes, completely," said someone else. Suddenly, Saj sprang up again and resumed his terrible shouting. The crowd stepped back. Some of them hurried away. A few of them approached Saj, speaking in calming voices. They took him by the arms and led him, still shouting, down the steps.
"Who dat? Who dat?"
said Poppy in her small, piercing voice. Lina turned away from the miserable spectacle.
"Hush, Poppy," she said. "It's a poor, sad man. He doesn't feel good. We mustn't stare."
She headed toward Knight Street, which ran along Greengate Square. There, a stringy-haired man sat cross-legged on the ground, playing a flute made out of a drain pipe, and five or six believers circled him, clapping and singing. "Soon, soon, coming soon," they sang.
"What's coming soon?" Lina wondered, but she didn't stop to ask.